Oh, look, I think that will continue. It has been building up for the last few years, and in particular, as social media becomes more powerful. And so it's forcing agribusiness industries and companies to really change their practices. In a lot of cases, they need to adopt practices that are impact on them financially and economically. Free-range eggs is a classic case, or farrowing stalls, or hormone growth promotants, which is not an animal welfare issue, but same sort of impact. So you have to adapt the practices. I think that cage eggs will probably be phased out over time, and that will impact obviously on a lot of people. But also the need to be much more accountable and be much more adept at managing social media and just being on top of the issue.
And social media is a very, very interesting one. And when you say adept at managing it, in what way?
You really need to be able to hit the issue very quickly with good information. It's one of those things where if you've got to respond within 12 hours, and if you don't, it goes like a grass fire. And the classic case was the Indonesian live cattle trade, where a TV show went on. Next day, the social media, within hours, the social media went off like a bushfire. The government and the industry were slow to respond. And so as a result of that, the live cattle trade was closed down. Very damaged. So I talk about, the need for a social license. You really need permission from society to operate in whatever you do. And GMOs are in that thing. Third world labour exploitation, sustainable farming practices, climate control, carbon footprint, and these are all issues that are social license issues that you have to really be accountable for, even if you don't want to be.
They all add cost to the farming structure.
They do, and we can't pass that on. So that's something that really erodes the profitability, and in a lot of cases, it will force a lot of businesses to go out of business because it just adds to their cost, and you can't pass it on.
What's the result of that? Does it mean that other business steps in, or does it mean people start buying more of product from overseas?
That's part of it, but I think, in a lot of cases, food will become more expensive, because if you go away from cage eggs to free range, that adds substantially to cost. So you're going to be paying more for food. Consumers will pay more for food. That will be a big part of it. But the other thing too is that consumers aren't really aware of what goes on to the from food that's imported. So if they, if they really look behind the food factories in China or Taiwan or as to what goes on, they probably wouldn't be that keen on buying them. But because of the labelling laws the way they are, and people don't always know what they're buying, and certainly not aware of the provenance of the food they're eating. So that's a major issue. It seems to be a sort of a double standard in terms of the scrutiny that Australian agribusinesses are forced to go through to sort of justify and validate the food compared with imports, where it's pretty slapdash.
The interface between agriculture and activities like mining, agriculture and, let's say, national parks, agriculture and communities, seems to be a very fraught one. Where do you see that going?
Well, I think there's been a growing divide between city and country people. And, when I grew up, we all had an uncle in the country, and we all visited farms, and we all went to the local show, and we understood a bit about agriculture. But now, half the population were born outside of the country. They don't have those connections, and they don't really understand food and so forth. So farmers have an image of being environmental vandals that are cruel and so forth. But farmers, are very caring about their land. They're very proud of what they do. They're very, protective of their livestock. But that's not understood. So they're portrayed as being environmental and cruel, people that are just unjust. They're not very good at telling their story, and the farming organisations aren't very good at telling their story. And so it's very easy for the tabloid media and the social media to drive that, to make a good story.
Can we talk about the Australian dollar? And one would think that's going to have a positive impact on our exporting farmers, but what's it going to do for the exporters and the local producers?
Well, I think, for export-oriented industries, most of which are, the dollar, you know, it'll probably get something below 80 cents next year, and that will start to open up export markets. In the last 5 years, we've been priced out of exports. You know, the dollar sort of went from 90 to over parity, so we're priced out of exports, and we used to, you know, 5 years ago, if you walk through a supermarket in Singapore, it'd be all of Australian food. Now there's virtually none. So that will fire up again. So, and what, the impact of that has been a lot of produce that used to get the exporters now flooded onto the domestic market. So domestic food has become very cheap. But that will reverse. So we'll see, you know, good quality. It's already happening with beef and lamb, where demand's growing and the price is going up. But in the seafood industry, you know, with particularly rock lobster, that's happened this Christmas, where rock lobster got to $1.40 a kilo. We'll start to see that with fruit and vegetables. With dairy industry, it's a bit different because it's sort of subject to world markets, and Australia is only a small player. So, but I think we'll see dairy prices going up a bit too. So I think the impact of that's going to be, food's going to become more expensive in Australia, and the bargaining power of supermarkets with across, you know, the likes of meat and milk and fruit and veg is going to be diminished by the stronger export markets.
So they're going to have to start to pay farmers more to Coles and
Woolworths. Yeah, and they're going to have to lock in the long-term relationships. So it's been a buyer's market for a long time, but now it's going to change, and they're going to have to start to lock in and start to sort of guarantee our returns for farmers and for agribusinesses, for abattoirs and dairy factories and stuff like that. So, we'll see a shift in that for sure.
An investment. One can only imagine with what the activity we've seen in this year alone that we're going to look at greater investment on farms and infrastructure.
Well, we're already seeing that, and we're seeing a lot of investment from Europe and Southeast Asia, and in recent years from China. And they're buying into dairy farms, and they're buying into beef properties, and they're buying into processing companies and distribution companies. So we'll see a lot more of that. To the overseas investor, the Australian agribusiness assets seem to be grossly undervalued. And so they see it as a good time, you know, to get in. The issue is for Australian superannuation funds, they're very short-term thinkers. They're measured every 6 months. And so agriculture seem to be too risky and volatile. But the long-term investors, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans, they've got a 20-year horizon, and if you lose money, they're patient investors who are prepared to invest for long term. They don't look at the short term returns, and we're seeing a lot of that happening, a lot more than we think is happening. And the recent free trade agreement with China, although the details haven't sort of come out, the early indications are that the barriers or the limits on foreign investment will be relaxed, and so we'll see a lot more of that. And a lot of it's state-owned companies from China as well. So, it's much bigger than you think it is.
Why do foreign investors, be they whatever, if they're a fund or a state-owned enterprise, if they're a sovereign fund, why do they believe that Australian agricultural assets and businesses are grossly undervalued?
Well, part of it is that the growing global demand for food, and a declining ability to produce it. So, the impact of climate volatility, the amount of arable land available is finite, if not declining, and demand for food's growing dramatically. And a lot of, and there's growing affluence and middle-class affluence in China and India and Asia. And the middle class, the first thing people do when they go from being a subsistence farmer to a salary is they spend more on food, and they want safe food and prepared to pay for it. So and the Chinese and the Japanese and so forth see that as the future. So it's just very basic maths that the ability to produce food is pretty flat. The demand for food is growing. So if you look at the big picture, demand for food has to grow, and the price of food has to go up, and therefore the return. So many predict that, farming will be the next mining boom, and I think that's a bit off for us. And but part of the issue is that, we talk about the Asian food boom, and we're going to be the food bowl to Asia. But the fact is, Australia Without foreign investment or without some capital injection, we're not competitive globally. We need to have massive injections of capital to become competitive and have the scale and efficiency and technologies you need to be a global supplier. So we're selling containers of powdered milk to China that someone turns into infant formula. A container of a ton of wheat that leaves Australia for $250 a ton is turned into $10,000 breakfast cereal. But that money is being made offshore. And so we need to really have the capital invested here to actually do it here and to be efficient here, because there's this myth that Australian farmers are the most efficient in the world. In fact, the matter is we're not, because we don't have the scale, we don't have the technology, our labour costs are too high, and so we need big licks of capital to get there, and we're not going to get it from domestic investors.
Do you think this foreign investment is going to cause friction within government with the coalition parties? Have you had a thought about politically what's going to happen moving forward?
Look, there's a lot of xenophobia around in this whole area, and particularly in country towns. And the thought of the Chinese buying the local almond orchard is sort of horrifying to people. But what people forget is that Australian agriculture was built with foreign money, be it American or English or Japanese or whatever, and we need foreign money. And the fact of the matter is they can't take the land away. They have to farm it here. We can control what they do with the product if we want to. It's going to benefit Australia economically, and particularly regional Australia, because that's where the jobs are, because most of these businesses, be they processing plants or production plants or whatever, farms or whatever, are in the country. And it's going to keep these country towns alive, but people are going to have to get used to that. And, and as I said, I think there's a lot of xenophobia around, particularly around Chinese and Middle Eastern investors.
What is that xenophobia extends to the coalition, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah, I think so. And the thing is that the National Party particularly have this thing that, the family farm is sacred and we've got to protect the family farm. And they're certainly, the National Party are very sensitive to foreign investment, and they're just responding to their constituents. And, it'll be interesting to see what Barnaby Joyce's white paper will look like. The green paper that's come out is sort of, weeks of sort of agriculture in the 60s. It's not forward looking, but interested to see what the white paper looks like and whether there's any sort of meaningful policy coming out of it.